In this segment, we're going to talk about some vacation stories that I brought back from our 3 weeks away. As the Hardline was calling it, the Muser's summer sabbatical. And I know it was a long time for us to be away, and it's really great to hear from P1s who wanted us back on the air.
We missed you all too.
We missed you all too, but we just ask for you cutting us a little slack. We have been waking up way too early for 30 years.
Yeah. It's a long time.
We need a break once in a while. Look at us. It's just taken its toll. So if this is what we need to keep going, I hope everybody's okay with that. And it was great being off for 3 weeks and sleeping in for 3 weeks.
Vaping.
And my family went to the mountains of New Mexico, which is where we go quite often for the holidays and for summer vacation. Just love it up there. Now, for a long time, I was a big Colorado fan. I've just loved the mountains. But Colorado has gotten way too crowded over the years, way too expensive. And the little mountain towns that I grew up loving in Colorado have now gotten, you know, jam-packed and outsized and overpriced. And so I still do love going to Colorado, but I found that New Mexico is a great alternative because it's a shorter drive. You have the same kind of Rocky Mountains. The Rocky Mountains do extend into New Mexico. And so you've got those tall ponderosa pines and those ski towns, but you've also got this unique blend of the high desert and this incredible blend of Native American culture and Spanish culture and Mexican culture and American culture. There's just no place like New Mexico, so we go there a lot. That Santa Fe, Taos corridor is our favorite.
Would you say in the course of your life you used to be a beach person, but now you're a mountains person, or has it always been the pretty much right there together?
That's a good question. I know growing up I was always a beach person because our family vacation every summer was to Port Aransas.
Yeah.
And we never went to the mountains ever. I never saw the mountains as a kid until I went to Circle K Ranch summer camp in the summer of my eighth grade, after eighth grade, before ninth grade.
That's where you had the horse named Dan.
That's where I had the horse named Dan. And
so we're going to go up this mountain, huh?
And I went with my two cousins, and we were on a bus with a bunch of kids from the Metroplex, an old yellow dog that drove us up there to near Durango, a town called Dolores. And we were there with the sexually advanced kids from Azle. We were on that bus.
Oh, yeah. He's made comfortable every time you talk
for those
about
kids
this.
From Azle.
Yeah, those kids from Azle knew things that
grow
we didn't.
Grow up fast out
we
there.
Did not know. Boy, do they grow up fast. And so that made it a little uncomfortable. But yeah, that was the first time I'd gone to the mountains. And then when my parents moved to Colorado when, George, you and I were in college.
Yeah.
And we went up there to visit them a couple times. And I would go up there every Christmas and summer. And that's when I really fell in love with the mountains. And the mountains went ahead of the beach for me, but just barely. I still love the beach.
Yeah. That was that trip we took in college was my first time to see the mountains. That was spectacular.
Yeah. There's more to do in the mountains. Especially if you do the things like I like to do, ride a bike, hike, ski. You know, on the beach, there can be a decent amount to do if you surf or swim or snorkel. But a lot of the beach is just sitting in a chair and having a beer and reading a book, which is also great.
Yeah, very therapeutic.
But I prefer the mountains, especially in the summer, because the weather up there is pretty spectacular. And I know we caught a break here in July. We haven't had any 105-degree days, I don't think. But still, up there, we were in Santa Fe, and every day is 80 to 85 for a high with no humidity, and the best thing, no mosquitoes.
Oh, really?
There,
wow.
There are no mosquitoes anywhere.
What's the elevation you need before mosquitoes go away?
I think it's more
5,000 feet?
I don't think it's so much elevation, although I'm sure that plays a role, but I think it's more about the dryness of the
humidity.
Climate. Mm-hmm. There are no ponds for them to breed in the high desert, because I've been to Montana in the summer in high elevation mountains and swarmed by mosquitoes because it was a little greener with lakes and rivers and ponds and whatever.
Mm-hmm.
I can't sit out in my backyard for more than 1 minute without getting 10 mosquito bites in Dallas.
Yeah, they're bad this year.
But we sat out in the backyard of the place that we stayed every day for hours and hours and hours, and I didn't get one mosquito bite the entire trip.
Yeah.
It's so relaxing to not have to like that every
slap your face
10 seconds. So the weather and the lack of mosquitoes and insects like that was really great. Very few flies even. We would eat outdoors a lot and no flies buzzing around your food.
That's great.
It's just great up there. With a two-year-old, we have decided that the easiest way to take these long trips, especially if we're going to stay for a while, is that mom and daughter fly. Dad is the long-haul trucker.
Okay. And kind of like a football team. You put the team on the plane, and the equipment guy takes the truck.
That's exactly right. And I am the equipment guy, which I didn't mind because I do love that drive. It's 10 hours. It's wide open roads. You don't go through
any big
cities.
Better to be in a car by yourself.
Yes.
For the long trip. Yeah.
You're by yourself, and, you know, she, the two-year-old, almost three here in a couple weeks, but the two-year-old would not handle 10 hours in a car seat, or even five if we split it up. So it's easier for them to fly.
But you do see that happen. The guy goes from being the king of his castle to all of a sudden you go way down that pecking order when kids arrive. And
equipment
you're mainly the support staff that kind of keeps the thing going.
But. Yes, yes. Throughout my back on our trip to Florida a couple of months ago, carrying five different suitcases through the airport,
right.
I couldn't stand straight for about a week.
And you're always the guy that, I'll drop you all at the front door and I'll go park out here, short 3 miles away, and I'll just carry all the stuff
in.
I got it. Y'all just get in there. I just no complaints. That's all I want. No complaints, really.
But
it's all you try to do as a dad, all you do is just try to tamp down
complaints.
Let's just keep all the voices down. It's just.
I do love that drive though, because you're traffic free. You never encounter any kind of rush hour or anything like that. And I love West Texas,
the open road.
That's where my roots are. Born in Amarillo, I did go by and see the statue, and.
The statue of you standing there. What are you holding?
That's another panhandle slim. That's not you.
Oh.
And even though, and I am correct in saying this, and everybody from West Texas will agree with me, it is the most godforsaken countryside anywhere.
It still is.
I love the people out there. Mm-hmm. And there's just wherever you're born, you have a feeling, a sense of attachment when you return there.
I totally agree. I feel the same way in the hill country.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that is...
Even though you weren't born there, you were born in
San Antonio,
Wisconsin, or somewhere.
No.
So, make the drive. They fly in. Everything went well. With my daughter, we did not have any dad-a-doo-doo moments.
What do you mean by that?
That
makes it sound like you're having the moments.
Yeah.
When we were in a cathedral for a Christmas concert, much more high-toned than we thought it was going to be. And I told this story when we came back from Christmas break, but during a pause, as the choir stopped during this very moving, meaningful Christmas song, which I think was being sung in Latin, that's how high tone this was, in this giant basilica, at the moment of silence, my daughter turned to me and said, "Dada, doo-doo," at the top of her lungs, and they were also recording that night for their CD.
For an album.
Yeah. I know how she feels. I tried to go to a call in a moment of silence once.
Yeah right.
Yeah,
Paul in...
The difference is she didn't feel bad about it. You did,
yeah.
But she didn't feel bad about it. So we didn't have any of those moments, but we did have a couple of funny moments. The place we were staying has a pretty big lot around the house, so she did lots of exploring. She doesn't really get to do that in Dallas, but when she's getting out and walking around, and we looked for lizards and rabbits, and there was one moment where we were kind of up on the driveway, and she looked down in the yard, and there was a deer, and she loved that. She thought it was one of Santa's reindeer.
Mm.
So she was wondering.
Did you reinforce that
close.
Fake story?
I did. Yes. Oh yeah.
Just take out your bow and drop it.
Gosh, right in front of her.
No, that would have been troubling.
Let me tell you about Circle of Life.
But I always wonder, especially when I'm there in New Mexico, because there's such a Native American culture. I wonder what the meaning of a deer in your backyard was. if that was good or bad.
It means you'll have like 14 days of good fortune.
Yeah, I think
that's
good.
What it means.
Yes, it was very good. It means that there's grace and balance in your life.
Yes.
So the Native Americans, when a deer would show up at their domicile, wherever they were living at the time, their camp or
I had a Native American friend who would just make stuff up, but he would sell it to us so easily. That means in my culture, so on. And he would say something, and we'd like, I'll buy it. And he goes, I was totally BSing you. I had no idea.
I think the funniest moment that we had out of her was at one point, one day, she was getting a little tired. And it's a long day for a kid, a toddler, especially when you're on the go and you're sightseeing and you're going to restaurants and shops and parks and things like that. Well, she got it in her mind that she wanted to do something very badly. And she said, you know, I want to go to that playground. No, we just don't have time because we have to get home and we have a friend coming over for dinner. So but I want to go to that playground. Now, I'm sorry, honey. We just don't have time.
That's a good point.
But I want to go to that playground.
Yeah, I agree with her.
No, I'm sorry. We just don't have time. And then she said, but this is my life.
Yeah. Why are you destroying it?
Oh, yes. And the you're sweating her. Mm-hmm. Okay.
I turned around and said, you're two. What do you mean this is your life? You're two. And it's so funny now that her vocabulary is expanding that we're getting phrases like that. Mm-hmm.
This is my... Where'd she get that from?
I have no idea.
This is my life.
I didn't think that kids gave you phrases like that. Or back talk like that.
Oh, yeah.
Until maybe they were 5 or 6 or 7, but we're getting this at 2.
Oh, yeah.
George never had back talk.
You can't. You get mysterious phrases when they're that age, and yeah, you spend that entire night going, where'd they get that from?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It was very funny, but couldn't figure out where she got that. So one day in this house, we're in the living room, middle of the day, and I'm walking through it. And my wife is sitting down, and out of the corner of my eye, I see something, and I jump. It was a mouse.
Mm-hmm.
Very brazen mouse, middle of the day, just running through the living room. So we tried to catch it. We lost it. And then we had a friend come over that night, my friend Fitz. You guys know Fitz.
Mm-hmm.
He was driving through town for work, and he stopped in. And we told him about the mouse, that we have a mouse in here somewhere we're trying to catch. So we're sitting down having a beer in the evening, and it's about time for him to go, and he turns, and he says, oh, there's your mouse. And it's running across the living room floor again. And my wife had a good question. She said, if we hadn't told you that we had a mouse, and then you had seen that mouse, would you have said something? Or is that too...
That's a good question.
Is that too embarrassing for the guest to say, hey, you got mice?
Yeah, I think you got to say something.
Well, he pointed it out, and between the three of us, we were able to catch this mouse. We had one of those clear plastic bins that you just, you know, that you load stuff in. And when we chased it out from under the couch, we put the bin over it, so we trapped it.
Oh, that's sweet. You released it out in the wild.
Yes, but I didn't have anything thin like poster board or a lid to slide under the bin to get it up and out and release it back into the wild. Which is what I was going to do. So I thought
you put on a pair of high heels and stomped it?
No. So I thought, let's just leave it here. This was late. It's like 10 o'clock at night. And I said, let's just leave it here in the living room. Because it had a little opening on each end where air could get in. I said, he'll be fine. And we'll figure it out in the morning. We'll go find some poster board or cardboard or plywood or whatever.
And I'll get to the hardware store and get a hammer.
No, I was going to release this 3-pound
mouse. 3-pound sledge.
I was going to release this mouse and get back into the wild because I'm all about not killing anything. Go to bed, wake up the next morning. I walk out to the living room, and there's the mouse curled up in the corner of this thing, and he's asleep. And I said, oh, how cute. Like all of us, he just went to sleep last night.
Yeah.
And then as I get closer and I look at that and I kind of start moving the bin around, I'm realizing...
Uh-oh.
No, he's dead.
Guess a lot of air wasn't going through there.
Well, I looked this up. It wasn't a lack of air that killed him.
Panic.
It was panic. I think he died of a heart attack.
Oh,
they say that mice, if they're trapped like that, can very quickly panic and have a heart attack. And so I killed this mouse accidentally he had a heart attack, and I felt awful about it.
What if he just had it? Did you try to do some chest compressions and
I didn't.
Get him going?
I didn't.
Try to shock his little mouse heart? Some paddles?
No, so that was the low point of the trip for me.
Why'd you do that to him?
Right in front of your daughter.
I tried.
Or maybe he did himself in. Did a little note fall out of his pocket? A note to you guys said why he did what he did?
Empty bottle of mouse pills.
Yeah.
That was the other
That's
thing.
That's what it's labeled, mouse pills.
Our daughter woke up asking where the mouse was, and we just said, he ran outside. He's doing fine.
But I see him right there behind in the plastic bin, curled up in the corner. You haven't done anything with him yet.
That's a worse way to go than the mousetrap snapping over his head or neck, right?
He had torture all night until he finally his heart seized.
I felt really bad about it. So anyway, that happened. The rest of the trip was great. The drive home ended up being great. I split it up because I put them on the plane on Friday around noon, and I didn't want to drive the 10 hours all the way back. So I split it up and went to Palo Duro Canyon on Friday night and rented one of those cabins that's right on the edge of the canyon. It's great there.
Oh,
it's
nice.
So peaceful and quiet, really beautiful.
Isn't that where I staged the Poydras play once?
Yeah.
Isn't that in
Palo Duro
Canyon? The theater, the amphitheater.
Yeah, on our Musers tour of Texas. But I ran into a couple of guys, a couple of typical West Texas guys. One of them, before I got to Palo Duro Canyon, I had stopped at a gas station, went inside to get some snacks, and this guy is in line in front of me, and he is wearing a cowboy hat, flannel shirt, Wranglers, boots, and he has in his hand a 30 pack of Coors Light.
Heck yeah, it's the weekend, bro.
It's Friday night, and he is buying that 30 pack of Coors Light, and I just looked at this guy. I love guys like this. Probably a really hard week of work, way harder than what
we
do.
Right.
Oh yeah.
And he is going to, I guarantee you, down all 30 of those over the weekend.
Yep. Yep. 10 a night.
There was another guy. The next morning, I stopped at this diner in Memphis, Texas, home of the football stadium that is 1 foot from the highway.
So unstable.
And he's sitting at the table next to me, and the waitress comes over, and she knows him. And this guy reminded me of Elmer Wayne, George's cousin, who calls our show. She says, "Hey, how's it going?" He said, "Good, good. I'm just by myself today. I was going to bring my daughter in here. I know she loves this place." And she goes, "Oh, yeah, I always love seeing her. Is she your only child?" And he said, No, I've got a son about 8 or 9. He's about 8 or 9.
Yeah, just ballparking it. He wasn't somewhere in that range.
He wasn't exactly sure how old his son is. And I thought, my God, this is Elmer Wayne.
About 8 or 9.
I got a son. He's about 8 or 9. And he's with his mother this morning.
Uh-huh.
Wasn't sure how old the son was.